Hello, everyone. Welcome to Squares the Cube, a multidimensional podcast where we discuss and ramble about MTG Cube. My name is Alex, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Ryan. Ryan, how are we doing today?
Doing amazing. Happy Tuesday, everyone.
Happy Tuesday. Anything fun or exciting been going on with your Tuesday here today?
Not too bad. Just excited to have a new co-host on the channel for today's episode.
Very cool. We will get to that here in just a second. We do have another regular co-host in Jesse. Jesse, how are we doing tonight?
Excellent. Just glad my weekend isn't over yet.
Not over yet, but it's almost over, right?
Don't remind me. Let's moving on.
Moving on. I'm sorry. That's a depressing topic. Well, like Ryan said, we do have another additional guest with us here tonight and a co-host of Max. Max, how are we doing tonight?
Feeling like a proud papa tonight, Alex.
Feeling like a proud papa. And why is that? Why are we feeling like a proud papa?
Because I got invited to talk about my cube.
That is a fun thing. Our cubes are kind of like our kids, aren't they? I do have a kid myself, so I don't know if I should be comparing my cube to children. My wife may not be so happy with that, but we do kind of love our cubes like kids, right?
Sounds like a future episode topic.
I hope not. That probably would not be something people would be very interested in, but we'd have to see. So we're doing some stuff a little bit different here tonight. The reason being, we've got our first guest here on the show, which we are very excited about. We've been mentioning the last few weeks on the episode that we are all going to be attending the Washington Cube Championship that is happening just above Seattle, Washington here March 9th and 10th, so just a little over a month away. Just last week, they announced the cubes from the voting of which cubes the players wanted to play at the event. And with that, we finally know what we're going to play. And so we had the opportunity here to start talking with some of the different curators of the cubes. One of the cubes selected was my cube. I'm going to toot my own horn here for just a second. My Pauper cube was selected. In the spirit of this fun event that we're all planning to go to, we kind of started to ask ourselves, how can we help the community with this process? How can we do something with our podcast, with our show, to help people get ready for this event? And so we're kind of going to be doing a thing over the next few weeks where we're going to be bringing on multiple of the different curators of these cubes to talk about their cubes and to help players get ready for this event, as well as introduce people at the cube community at large with just some more people who create cubes. Like Cube and talk about Cube. But before we do that, we are going to jump into our regular starting segment of talking about what cubes we've been playing this last week. So starting with Jesse. Jesse, have you been doing any cubing this week?
Oh, a little bit. As usual, I was at Wayward City Games for our in-person media meetup in Vancouver. We had a pretty small pod, as a lot of our regulars were on trips this week, so we got to jam some four-player Houseman with, matter of fact, your Alex's unpowered vintage cube, and I put up my first losing record at the store, I think, and going 1-2. Proud, yeah. I'm also a proud papa. My little losing record.
You're sounding a little bit sad about that, my friend. You still had a lot of fun playing with the cube, though, right?
Yes.
Sounds very convincing.
I confess to being one of the sweatier players, so that there's definitely some aspect of when my deck doesn't really come together or doesn't do what I want it to. I get a little sad, but that's a personal problem.
Sure. Yeah, we did. We had a smaller turnout this last week up at Wayward. We only had four of us show up, and so actually very fittingly, after we just talked about Houseman drafting last week, we did a Houseman draft with the four of us that showed up of my cube and had a very good time doing it. Sounds like next week we're going to have some more people, and so we're probably back to a regular draft next week. But again, like we were talking about on the show, that sometimes we have different numbers of people show up, and we have to plan accordingly. Though I do know of somebody who did get a full draft off, I believe, last week. Ryan, did you do any cubing this last week?
Yes, I had the opportunity to cube three times, twice at my own place with my own powered cube, and once over in Salem with the Promised Neverland cube, if I'm not mistaken, right, Alex?
The Promised Land cube, which is Jacob's cube, which has just recently gone under a new name. And one of these days, we are going to get Jacob on in the future to talk about that cube, because it's a very unique thing that he does with that cube. And you can go over that maybe a little bit here, Ryan, if you want. But we'll definitely be going over that cube in further detail in the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. How did you feel like stuff went with your draft at your cube on Friday, Ryan, with at your house?
It went pretty phenomenal. We had some pretty amazing moments. So the first round, we had a full eight. We drafted teams. We did Cogwork Librarians as well. My first pick was Mana Crypt and Mox Pearl, which was a phenomenal start. We had some wonderful decks 3-0, a perfect Underworld Breach and Storm deck. Unfortunately, both my teams in both drafts just had some pretty bad games, and we lost pretty handily. So I had a 2-1 record in both cubes, but unfortunately, neither of my teams closed out.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. That's it's hard with team drafts sometimes, right? When things don't go through your way for the team, and sometimes it's your fault, and sometimes it's the team member's fault, and that can just kind of be how that goes with the team draft sometimes.
Absolutely. It was a ton of fun, though. We got two drafts in within 7 hours, which was just incredible.
Wow. Okay, yeah, you guys are moving. That's some pretty good timing. Well, also, with our special guest here this week, Max. Max, have we been doing any cube in here this week?
Like Ryan, I was able to get in 3 cube drafts this week. All 3, actually, at my home. And first one was a Minesweeper draft of my Vintage Cube with 4 people. Then I did a Minesweeper draft of the Raveyard Cube and a full testing draft of the Raveyard Cube on Sunday. That was more normal.
Very cool. And do you have plans to do more future drafts with the Raveyard Cube between now and the Cube Champs? I'm assuming probably to get some more testing in.
Well, I wanted to get a glut of testing in before this podcast episode so I could speak from as informed a place as possible. I'm feeling pretty good. Maybe some of the new Markov Manor cards, which I'm planning to add maybe 5 mechanically new cards. Testing with those would be great.
Very cool. Well, that's always the hardest thing about new cards too, right? It's just not having the reps in with them yet to fully evaluate them and to get a good feel for how they're going to play with the rest of the environment.
There's a zombie that investigates. I'm so excited.
Clues, the zombies leaving behind clues. It really is a Scooby-Doo here, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, very cool. Well, yeah, so tonight we are going to be talking with Max about the Raveyard Cube, which was the cube that he submitted for the Washington Cube Champs that got selected. Bunch of different cubes and a bunch of different varieties. This was kind of the one cube that's tribal thematic that got selected for the Washington Cube Champs. We'll be having some of the other cube curators on here in the further weeks to talk about their cubes and kind of the place in it. But this was more the tribal offering for the Washington Cube Champs. Before we dive into the cube, though, I do want to kind of introduce Max here and get him onto the show a little bit, talking about himself. So, Max, kind of the age-old question that all Magic players ask each other, when and how did you get into playing Magic the Gathering?
Jewish summer camp. My friend introduced me to Magic the Gathering in middle school, and we started playing around Onslaught, a tribal set, on and off after that, and got back into it fully in college with M13, so just after Innistrad had come out, I believe, and have been playing solidly since then.
I'm curious to ask then, what was the first format you learned about, or when did you get into Cube?
First format I learned about was Modern, and that was Mono White Death and Taxes at first, and then Kiki Pod. I loved Kiki Pod. And then got into Legacy after that once Kiki Pod got banned.
same actually.
Yeah. And really enjoyed playing with Deathrite Shaman in Legacy, and then that got banned, and then I started playing Cube, I think.
Yeah, no, I think I know a few people who definitely have their origins tied to just seeing the cards they wanted to play with go away in one way or another, whether it was losing their favorite deck to rotation or losing some of their favorite cards to bans. And you're like, hey, there's a format where we can just play what we want. No, that's great.
Yeah, and Deathrite Shaman is good again, which is amazing.
That card is one mana Planeswalker is what I like to call it.
Yeah.
Incredibly overpowered.
incredibly overpowered and in just the sweet spot for, you know, like a double fetch Vintage Cube.
Oh, for sure. Was there something specifically that led you into building your first cube rather than just partaking in cube?
My answer is probably common across our community too, which is videos of LSV drafting cube online.
All right, we oh, another first timer to LSV. I hear a lot of LSV, and I hear a lot of the Tolarian Academy, which, you know, like them or not, your opinions on them don't matter much. You can't take away the huge impact they've had for the growth of the game. So got to respect them for that at least.
Definitely, especially here in the last few months. I mean, as LSV's been doing his daily videos on YouTube, I mean, that's just been a huge boon for the community as far as bringing new players in and introducing people to the cube format in general.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's got Wizards even running the Magic Online Cube, right, almost monthly now. So they're introducing that more often and more frequently just due to the natural attraction of more players to the Vintage Cube or Cube in general.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do with Daybreak Games taking over management of MTGO as well, trying to find other ways to monetize that software as well as, you know, bring players back to the platform to keep playing Cube. Well, very cool. Well, now that we've kind of gotten to know Max a little bit, let's get into the Raveyard Cube. Max, you want to kind of introduce us to this cube and what your general thoughts were when you designed it? What inspiration led us to creating the Raveyard Cube?
Yeah, so originally I and my friends drafted Shadows Over Innistrad, and I absolutely loved the gothic horror tone of the set, I guess combined with body horror. It absolutely blew me away, kind of the way they laid clues that Emrakul would be the big bad eventually. And yeah. I also really enjoyed the gameplay, and so I built a Shadows of Innistrad set cube using kind of that classic formula: single copy of every rare, three of each uncommons, three of each common, something like that. And that cube didn't get played with very often. It laid in my closet for 3 or 4 years. Meanwhile, I had my other child, if we're using that metaphor, to focus on. And I
think we are now here tonight. I think that's how this episode's going to roll.
I decided to dust off this guy when I heard about spooky cubes becoming more popular. And there are a few cards that had come out since, like Muldroth of the Gravetide, which I'll talk about a little bit later. And listening to Lucky Paper Radio, I had picked up a lot of cube design philosophy that I wanted to test out in terms of smaller mana curve and more synergistic ties between the different creatures and the colors. And this turned into Spooky Cube, and then Spooky Cube turned into Raveyard Cube.
Very cool. That's awesome.
I guess if I had to give a bird's eye view tagline, which every cube owner should know how to do, I guess, it is somewhere between an Innistrad Remix Cube and a Spooky Cube. So there's going to be spooky vibes and quite a few graveyard synergies playing out in every game. And I want the Tribes of Innistrad to be plentiful and front-facing for all the drafters.
All right. That sounds like a wildly dynamic and ever-shifting thing to keep up with. Do you have like a favorite method for tracking color pairs and archetypes in your cube, or tracking their performances throughout your drafts?
In terms of tracking color pairs and archetypes, I really enjoyed the template that Innistrad had laid out for us, where vampires are red and black, spirits are blue and white, zombies are blue and black, werewolves are red and green. Humans, a little bit more interesting, they seem to be spread throughout the Naya colors, so red, white, green. I made sure that each of those tribes were solidly nested in those colors, and each one had a primary color and a secondary color. So for example, if you're drafting zombies, your deck will be more heavily black than blue, usually. And that is mostly a function of the space of having a cube that's about 360 cards. And also that sort of swing between the colors, where the zombies deck wants more black cards and the spirits deck wants more blue cards, leads to a bit more dynamic drafting that way. In terms of tracking how all the archetypes do, I ran into and tread ground that others before me have tread, such as Frank Laporte with his Spooky Cube, where there were a few archetypes like humans that overperform pretty consistently, and a few archetypes like werewolves that underperform consistently. And it took a lot of tuning and down-tuning the power level to try to get it to a place where I felt good about it.
So are you at a place at the moment that you feel fairly comfortable with the balance of the tribes? Or where do you think that that's currently at with the current iteration of your cube?
I am feeling pretty comfortable. This last week, I drafted Black Red, Vampires, Madness, and I went undefeated. And I drafted Blue White Spirits, and I went undefeated. Werewolves is... the least tested of the tribes, because a lot of my green drafters want to dip their toes into other colors or bigger strategies. So as a synergistic tribe, they don't seem to be quite there. And instead, we're leaning on pretty powerful werewolves by themselves, like Huntmaster of the Fells. There's one that I added in the cube recently to try to boost the archetype called Ill-Tempered Loner from Innistrad Crimson Vow. Two generic mana, two red mana for a human werewolf 3/3. When it's dealt damage, it deals that much damage to any target. It has daybound, nightbound. I'm not reading the full card, but on the night side, whenever a permanent you control is dealt damage, it Halpak Avenger, the other side of this sky, deals that much damage to any target. Any permanent. Yep.
Still damage. Yeah. I haven't seen this thing before, and I know that it was in the, you know, the Innistrad set that was actually just a couple of years ago. This thing is actually pretty sweet.
It's extremely sweet, and it's the kind of card that is a werewolf. And what I mean by that is it's a phenomenal red card that I expect most red-based decks in my cube to be drafting. It is not saying, like, I'm a werewolf lord. I synergize with other werewolves necessarily.
Yeah, that's, I think, what's always been the popularity of Huntmasters. That card's just generically powerful regardless of whether or not you have a lord out, which is another, like, to close out the werewolf topic, I'm seeing this Tovalar's Huntmaster. This one's new to me because I was kind of gone for this set, but
the six drop that is one, right?
Yeah, this is just, it's not quite Grave Titan, man. As far as werewolves go, I think that's as close to Grave Titan as we're gonna get, and I definitely like this card.
Yeah, Tovalar's Huntmaster is the Grave Titan of my cube, and great segue too, because it is a 6-mana threat that'll win the game entirely on its own.
Yeah, absolutely.
In order to try to build a more synergy-driven cube, taking a note from Caleb Gannon's Synergy Vintage Cube from a while back, I tried to imagine how and when games would end. And so a lot of my 1-4 mana threats aren't going to end the game entirely by themselves. And I decided that 5 and 6 mana was really the sweet spot for when you can expect a card to just kill the opponent by itself, such as Tovalar's Huntmaster, Thundermaw Hellkite, stuff like that.
Built the game in someone's favor instantaneously.
Yeah.
That definitely has a lot of standard vibes. I mean, obviously there's been some weird standard outliers where powerful combos were legal or Delver of Secrets was a problem, but I feel like a lot of standards have been, you know, interaction. Oh, I can resolve Thundermaw now, or I can play my Primeval Titan, or 5 and 6 has definitely been a powerhouse place. Is that intentional in any way? Are you attempting to make the games kind of feel like these interactions till 5 and 6 kind of like standard, or was that a thought at all?
Yes, intentional, because I want the tribal decks to be viable. And I wanted them to be viable in a synergistic way, which meant that you were knitting together 1, 2, 3, and 4 mana cards in these decks to try to come up with a strategy that is greater than the sum of its parts. So in the Spirits deck I was winning with, my opponent landed a Tovalar's Huntmaster, and I happened to have a white card called By Invitation Only, which is a 5-mana board wipe where you choose a number between 0 and 13, and each player sacrifices that many creatures. And that was my only consistent answer to Tovalar's Huntmaster, and I needed to depend on it to win those games.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of... It's maybe not a good place to be, obviously, because we'd love to have more answers, but I think that's one of my favorite things to realize in sideboarding post game one, like between, you know, before game two, game three, realizing that X threat in my opponent's deck only has X, you know, X answers in my, like, there's one or two ways that I can answer this thing, and I have to save them for that card. And I kind of just feel like a mega mind when I realize it. It's like, okay, I cannot deal with an indestructible permanent. I have to save this counter spell or this O-ring for it. And I'm just like, oh, I'm so smart.
Jesse, this cube will absolutely reward you with moments like that. I have seen many of the matches go down to the last 10 cards in both players' decks. So you, at the end of game one, you tend to know exactly what your opponent's deck is trying to do.
Oh, love it. This sounds like my home. Can't wait to draft this in person.
Yeah, and paired with those strong finishers, I made the removal pretty good. So we have cards like Unholy Heat and Bitter Triumph, which are Vintage Cube mainstays. And both of them can actually deal with Tovalar's Huntmaster on their own. So you have this interplay of maybe not quite as much removal as in Vintage Cube. Maybe it's a half step worse on average, but it's still getting there against the big haymakers your opponents are trying to land. So on the whole, it feels a lot more like a standard set, like you were saying.
Yeah, no, I mean, it feels like a good place to be. That's kind of a thing I think Magic's struggling with now, and we've talked about a little bit in the Power Cube episode, that the answers are just not as good as the threats anymore. And I think that's one of the things I like about a well-designed cube is more often they're closer than, you know, an average commander designed set or a commander deck is. Or the answers are not quite there, but they're close enough that you don't feel like you're being buried if your opponent just goes threat after threat and you're going answer, answer. But you did mention here, you know, things to be watching for and how good the removal is. I'm going to segue a little bit into, we're about to have a bunch of brand new people drafting your cube up in and around Seattle in March for Washington Cube Champs. Do you have any advice you'd give to specifically to first-time drafters of your cube? Things they should be taking, things they shouldn't pass, etc.?
Yes. Okay. So I'm heavily influenced by Sam Black here, who went on to a Lucky Paper Radio episode and talked about signals in drafting the hard way, how strongly you should be sticking to your first pick, essentially. Advice I would give to every listener is to take a look at your first pack and find some cards that are generically strong. So stuff like Unholy Heat, Bitter Triumph that I mentioned before. Another great card here would be Tireless Tracker. So things that you are familiar with from other cubes, that you're familiar with from Vintage Cube, and take it. Take a look at the pack and see if there are any tribal signals or specific deck signals, and then see if you can catch any of those on the wheel. So an example of this using spirits, the card Spell Queller, 1BW, is a well-known card that is going to be strong in just about any deck that can cast it. There is another card here, Millicent, Restless Revenant, who is 5BW for a 4/4 Flying Spirit Soldier, who happens to cost one less for every spirit you control. With the bonkers ability of whenever she or another non-token spirit you control dies or deals combat damage, you create a 1/1 white spirit with flying. So what I would advise people to do is take that Spell Queller and keep an eye out to see if Millicent Restless Revenant wheels. Because if she does, that's a strong signal for you to be able to go and move into spirits and draft a more spirits-specific deck. If yeah, she doesn't... Like, yeah. Oh, sorry?
I was just going to say, I feel like that's some excellent advice for cubes in general. Definitely applies to tribal more than I've really thought about. I don't guess I've actually designed or thought about tribal and cube that much myself. I've only ever built power cubes that weren't tribed. However, that's something I do now is, you know, I'll take a card that's exceptionally good in like a wheels package or something like that and send something that's only good in the wheels deck around, you know, send Narset around and see if Narset comes back, and then move into the Wills package after taking the card that's always good, right? Like you mentioned, take the Spell Queller, because if I don't end up in Spirits, I'll still love casting a Spell Queller, but I really only want to be playing that 7-drop if I'm doing Spirit Shenanigans, so definitely love that, and that's something I think you could take to any cube.
Absolutely, and if that 7-drop that is just there for the Spirits deck does not end up coming around, instead, you are there taking good blue and white cards like By Invitation Only and others, and basically knitting together something I would call a more good stuff deck or a more generic strong cube deck that isn't necessarily as focused as the tribal deck would be, but is still going to end up being great because you just took all the best cards out of the packs.
Absolutely. Yep. This, you've summed up my drafting strategy. I don't know how you know me so well, but awesome. Love it.
So, Mac, I got to ask a couple of things, good sir. The first one is, have you had any amazing Halloween drafts with this puppy yet?
I have yet to have a Halloween draft with this puppy. We normally get everybody together and watch a horror film every Halloween instead. So most recently we did The Birds.
Oh my gosh, I love that movie.
All right, so next time we can do this, we're going to have the movie playing in the background while we cube. Got it.
Absolutely.
I think the movie is the pace appropriate to have on in the background during a cube draft.
Love it.
We can be all dressed up, get the orange and black theme really going there. So another thing too, Max, is has working on this particular cube taught you anything or new or particular about Magic or the way you play Magic or the way you interact with the game?
Yeah, working on this cube has helped me recapture a bit of what got me to fall in love with Vintage Cube in the first place, if I can share that.
Yeah,
which is
certainly
this sense of landing these haymakers. So decks trying to land these five, six mana haymakers and win from there versus decks that are trying to knit together a synergy or a strategy, which felt a lot like what older Vintage Cube was doing prior to, I don't know, Throne of Eldraine. Nowadays, it is more about getting your curve right, getting your curve very cheap, and knowing what the power outliers are and really leaning on your 4-mana threats or 3-mana threats. So building this cube, tuning down the power, and tuning down the complexity, which I haven't spoken about yet, but something I really enjoyed about the Innistrad sets was, despite double face cards existing, they tend to be pretty simple, especially compared to newer ones. I was able to recreate the sort of gameplay that just brought a smile to my face and to my drafters' faces. And I learned a lot about this balance between threats and answers that we were talking about and what exactly it means to try to be mindful about how you're dialing it in.
Well, in this giant game of balance, when we're talking about threats and answers and individual cards, a whole nother unique part of this cube, like we've been discussing, is the fact that it does have a lot of, you know, the tribal elements to it, that each of the color pairs tends to have something that it's doing somewhat on a tribal theme, it looks like from the overview. What has this cube, or in particular, taught you about designing a tribal-based cube? Has it led you to change your thoughts on designing a cube kind of this caliber?
So having started in Onslaught and playing a decent amount of Onslaught, it shouts at you that it's a tribal set and it wants you to play goblins or elves or beasts. And it has so many cards that specifically reference their own tribe that you get this drafting on rails experience, right? Where it feels like you're supposed to find your lane and stay in your lane. Designing a tribal cube, that felt like a really easy pitfall to fall into, where I had, you know, multiple copies of all the Dark Ascension Lords in there earlier that says all your vampires get +1/+1 and first strike, right? Which isn't that good of a card in anyone else's deck. It's arguably not that great in the vampires deck. It's just a signal there to the vampires drafter saying, hey, I should draft more vampires. Instead, I down-tuned the number of lords in particular and just made the vast majority of the creatures in my cube of a creature type that I cared about. So one of those big five. So you'll see actually very few breaks from that. And when the breaks are there, they tend to be fueling other synergies.
So they're kind of actually like a reverse signpost at that point, right? Where if we're seeing something that's not of the tribes, that tends to mean that we should be looking at it for a specific archetype in general then, right? Because it's helping to fuel additional things that we can do within the synergy archetypes of the different tribal stuff, correct?
That is absolutely right. A good example of that is Gixxian Puppeteer, which is 3 and a black for a Phyrexian Warlock, not one of our main types. It's a 4/3, and it says whenever you draw your second card each turn, each opponent loses 2 life and you gain 2 life. And it also unearths something when it dies. And the point of this in the cube is to feed into that synergy with Investigate and with the blue-red spells deck, because both of those decks are easily able to draw a second card every turn. It also has cross synergies with blood tokens, which allow you to draw a second card, so in general it was a slam dunk. So I would say if a creature, if you see a creature in this cube and it doesn't have one of those five creature types, it's probably pretty strong.
Got it.
Yeah, definitely. I've never seen this Treyarch Praetorian. I'm still learning all the 40k cards. But I really like this card. It's very low to the ground, 2 mana, 2/1 flyer that unearths, and then you draw 2 cards and lose 2 life when it enters the battlefield from a graveyard. But it's in this sweet spot of being unearthable and targetable by extraction specialists. You know, just a really, really happy sweet spot to be abusing this draw 2, lose 2 when it comes into play from the graveyard. I love this near cube.
I did something with this card that every cube owner should feel free to do, which is I eroded it to be a zombie. So there is a big old zombie sharpied on it.
That is awesome. Fair. So it has some tribal themes.
It is a Necron, to be fair. Oh. I mean, if it wasn't specifically in the 40k universe, it would be a zombie. So,
right. Especially since it's a card that fewer people are going to be familiar with, since it's newer and Universes Beyond, you can take erratas like that more liberally, as opposed to a card that everyone knows.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, and I support that one. That one even makes sense in canon, so that's great.
When I was testing this cube and asking for feedback, the number one criteria I was asking for is, does anything feel not flavorful? Not in canon, like it's a flavor break for this Innistrad Raveyard spooky vibe we're building here. And that is the number one reason I would cut a card.
Do you ever feel pigeonholed by that when you're designing a cube that's more based on aesthetics and theme? I mean, obviously gameplay is a major part of this cube, as you've been talking about balances of answers and threats, but do you ever feel pigeonholed by the limit of cards that you have available kind of in your theme? Is that something you ever feel limits anything?
Dude, I've got a stack of about 700 cards that disagrees with you.
So the answer is no. Okay, great.
Yeah, well, awesome. I added Poison Dart Frog, which is a community favorite from recent set, and it seems to fit right in, even though it has nothing to do with Innistrad.
Awesome.
It's so cute, too. It is so cute.
It is so cute. Look at that cute boy.
Such a cute boy.
That skull in the back, though, with that golden tooth. I mean, I don't know. I'm sensing the horror vibe. I mean, while they're very cute, he definitely fits right in with the theme of this cube.
Indeed.
Oh. No, he's my favorite, too.
Yeah.
Just going in a power cube.
Keep an eye out, vintage cubers. Look out for Poison Dart Frog.
Adding a foil one to my cart right now.
Too strong.
Yeah.
He awesome. Is inevitable. Well,
it's great to know that there's no limit of things that you know you could take advantage of in your cube. That's great.
To quote many people before me, restriction breeds creativity, right?
Exactly. I know that is a favorite quote of many people of wizards as well as the cube community. That's definitely great words to live by when designing things. Speaking of that, then, so we've talked about a couple of the different archetypes in your cube. We've talked about werewolves a little bit. We've talked about spirits. In zombies, what about the other ones that we haven't touched on quite as much about? I know we said earlier that humans tend to be very powerful, and you know some of the better cards come out in that vein. And then also vampires is the other tribe that you have in this cube that we haven't touched on quite as much. Is there anything that we can talk about specifically with those tribes?
Yeah, so there's a couple reasons why humans are very powerful. The first one, I guess I'll sum up as Thalia, Guardian of Thraben, which is a powerhouse of a card in every format that she's legal in, happens to be a human soldier, is a great example of that sort of non-synergistic tribal that we have running through the cube. Same with Dragon's Rage Channeler, also a human. Same with Tireless Tracker. The list goes on, and all of these incredibly powerful cards just happen to be humans, and they synergize with each other thematically and in gameplay because they want you to play cheap creatures that flood the board state, but most of them are not Champion of the Parish, which is looking for humans specifically and growing when you play them. I want to call out Thalia's Geistcaller, 2 and a white for a 3/1 human cleric with lifelink, a powerful ability, who says whenever you cast a spell from your graveyard, make a 1/1 spirit creature token with flying. and also has the ability to sack a spirit at instant speed to give herself indestructible until end of turn. And she has been able to cross-synergize both with the spirits deck and basically anything that is trying to cast spells out of its graveyard. So that is Disturb, Flashback, things like that. And the humans deck just seems to get by with these 2 and 3 mana threats flooding the board and chipping away at card advantage while maintaining that board presence. Kind of like what you would see in mono white in the Vintage Cube. Until the opponent is dead. There's something to be on the lookout for in my cube, which is repeatable sources of card advantage. Since the games get grindy and go a bit long, we have cards like Lenore Autumn Sovereign, who is 2 green and a white for an 0/4 human noble, with Coven. So if you have 3 different creatures of different powers, at the beginning of combat on your turn, you put a +1/+1 counter on one of them. And then you get to draw a card. I didn't get all the words on that card quite right, but basically it's a repeated card draw engine every single turn.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I know you mentioned at the very beginning when you mentioned what the cube, kind of the primer, or the synopsis, shorthand synopsis of the cube was, but the overarching theme I'm noticing is that the graveyard matters. So it seems like a lot of your recurring value, a lot of your recurring card draw is in reusing resources from the graveyard. What are, like, obviously you've already mentioned Dragon Rage Chandler. Are there any things you're doing unique with the graveyard that aren't common to other cubes?
I'm going to bookmark what you just said and circle back to it when we talk about zombies. Things that aren't common to other cubes... I think I am giving Disturb from one of the more recent Innistrad sets a good old college try. It is primarily in the Spirits deck, and you get a bunch of cards that are humans that have this sort of flashback to them where you cast them and they flip, and they happen to be spirits a lot of the time on the reverse side. And that's been playing really well. Besides that, I would say... part of what makes this cube appealing to others is it is doing a lot of what we already know and love from graveyard decks, which is Snapcaster Mage. Just the card Snapcaster Mage. We love them.
Yep.
Can't go wrong, yep. Right?
So powerful.
To use that to talk about zombies, what that deck is trying to do can be summed up by that card Gravecrawler, which is 2/1 that can't block and you just get to cast it as long as you control a zombie. There's Triarch Praetorian, which we talked about, and basically flooding the board with zombies, maybe pairing this, dipping your toe into vampires for a card such as Blood Artist, and using that to generate card advantage and drain your opponent and win.
A little bit of Aristocrats, maybe?
Yeah, Aristocrats is a great word for that, yeah. And it's kind of... build your own Aristocrats deck here, where it's not shouting at you from the black-red section of my cube, but there are cards like Falconwrath Aristocrat, free instant speed sack outlets, and the Zombies deck is well-positioned to kind of recur its creatures to get a couple decayed ones out there and to drain the opponent until they are dead.
Yeah, Aristocrat being a titan of its standard format and, you know, more or less leading to the creation of the name Aristocrats for that deck. That is awesome to see it back in cube. I've missed that card.
It does so well in this cube. Since this is playing out kind of like a standard format, Flyers have done historically, and I expect them to be quite good in this cube. So have a plan to deal with flying creatures.
That makes sense. I am sad that goblins aren't on theme, so we don't get a goblin bombardment, because my lord, would I take that card so highly in this cube.
I had it, and it was taken highly, and it was quite good. It had a secret rider on it that said you basically win every combat, and damage uses the stack again.
Yeah, no, that card would be wild in this cube. I had to go check immediately, because I'm like, well, I know how I win this cube if it's here.
Oh, man.
Go ahead, Jesse.
Perfect. I was just realizing I just mentioned spiking, and it's something we haven't talked about, really. In your personal view, with all the insight and knowledge that comes with being the designer, which, I don't know, maybe I may be an outlier in that because I feel like I know the least about my own cube. I always feel like my mind starts to swirl too much because I end up like, oh, I could change this. I could change this in the middle of the draft before I know it. I'm five color good stuff. But would you give advice on how to spike your own cube? Like, what's the goblin bombardment that isn't goblin bombardment?
This advice goes for spiking any cube, which is know the deck you're positioning yourself to draft into, right? So in the vintage cube, let's focus this on Raveyard Cube. In the Raveyard Cube, there's going to be a couple archetypes that are tribal specific and a couple that aren't, such as the Madness deck. And to do well, you're on the lookout for a few very specific cards. There's a colorless card called Containment Construct, which is a 2-mana construct. No, it's not one of the tribal creature types. And it basically gives every single one of your cards madness, including your lands.
It does say play. Ooh. That is interesting.
Yeah, you can cycle an Ash Barrens.
That's cool.
So I know when I'm drafting the Madness deck that I need this card in order for my deck to come together and go from B level to A level, right?
Right. Now you have me checking to see if Anjay's in the cube. There she is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she is.
Perfect.
So you can get to know the cube on that level. You can also do kind of a fundamentals drafting and building strategy where you're looking at cards like Avacyn's Pilgrim, and you're noting that there isn't really a lot of ramp in this cube, and you're saying, hey, this is probably pretty good. I can get to 3 and 4 mana quicker than my opponents. Or, hey, Seasoned Pyromancer, I recognize that from the vintage cube. I'm just going to draft it. And I think that'll go well for you as well. So board wipes are good. Strong removal is good. Ways to deal with flyers. There's a few strong tri-color build rounds, like Muldrotha the Gravetide, which lets you cast permanents and play lands from your graveyard every turn.
Yeah.
And seasoned drafters looking to build strong decks around these three color build arounds, I would just say prioritize your lands, which we're all used to hearing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just know that if you're dipping your toe into a third color, or heaven forbid, a fourth or fifth color, you really need to get to work drafting those lands.
Absolutely.
Speaking of lands and mana bases, that's actually something we haven't talked too much about here tonight with this cube. What are your thoughts overall as to creating mana bases for cubes and things that we should look out for specifically with the Raveyard cube here?
To all the cube owners out there, may I recommend building a second different cube? Because I was able to take the land balance that I had landed on in the vintage cube and shift it and dial it back and make it a little more difficult again, wanting there to be not quite as much shuffling as in that darn vintage cube. And so instead I've got some simple land cycles like the bicycle lands, pain lands, check lands, slow lands, filter lands. I have the temple cycle in right now. I'm going to be switching out for the surveil cycle from Murders at Karlov Manor, which I'm very excited for.
Yeah.
And I would say there is barely enough lands for three color decks that are viable, kind of depending on your table. The lands should be great for a solid two color deck. So I would say have a primary color and then dip your toes into a second and maybe a third. I have yet to see mono color decks doing that great here. Probably just because people haven't tried them very often.
Looking at your lands, it looks like you are playing full cycles of the dual lands that you're playing. Is that correct?
Yes. More with some caveats where the bicycle lands, there's only 5 of them.
Right.
And so I paired that with the filter lands, which I think was originally like a Lorwyn or Shadowmoor cycle.
Shadowmoor, yeah. No, and those are perfect. Those are a favorite of mine as well that I know don't get a lot of love in the cube community, you know, very often. So it's great to see those, especially when they're on theme for a spooky cube.
Yeah, full cycles of everything else. And there's actually 60 lands in the cube, which is nice and high and cozy. But the fixing will feel worse as you're drafting because this isn't like the Fetchland Shockland mana base you're used to.
Sorry, Ryan, I cut you off there a second ago. What were you about to ask?
So Max, I did have a couple of questions. Are you going to be adding any new cards from possibly the like Lord of the Rings, like the land cycling cards or Samwise or things of that nature into this before Cube Champs?
Not spooky.
Gotcha, gotcha.
I will be adding something like Novice Inspector, which is a functional reprint of Thraben Inspector, which is also going to be beloved by the community. Murders at Karlov Manor had a lot more for me to pick through, I would say. So getting further things to pay off into my investigate synergies are going to be extremely fun.
Yeah, that's definitely more on theme for you.
Yeah, and there's a couple, what do you call these, dual cards? Where like push-pull that... Yeah, but these don't have fuse abilities.
They're called split cards if they don't have fuse at the bottom. Yeah, split or fuse, depending on whether or not fuse is at the bottom of the card.
Yeah, there's a couple new split cards from Murders at Karlov Manor that are appealing to me because they just seem simple, plain and simple. And I just want to get back to those days.
Yeah, those were one of those cards that like confused people early on, and there were some rule changes due to that. So I'm curious to see if anything else gets broken with all the new cards that have been printed. But I do recall Bloodbraid Elf cascading into Boom Bust prior to some rule changes. So there's been a lot of cards printed. Yeah, there's been a lot of cards printed since the split card has been used, so I'm curious to see if anything else breaks it. That'll have to be wait to be seen. But segueing, we are just about a month out now from the Washington Cube Champs, which is why we're all here today, because you were lucky enough to have your cube voted for by the community to be, you know, featured at that event. As we head into that event, what are your expectations for the event? You have any guesses about what tribe is going to win, or are you hoping to get some feedback? Like, what are your thoughts about the cube event going forward?
I am excited to get feedback, and I'm excited for people to have fun with this cube. So hopefully people signing up to draft a Raveyard cube, you're welcome to spike it. I think you'll have a blast if you try to spike it. And, you know, maybe the Muldrotha deck does spike it, and that is just going to be super duper fun to see a grindy Seasons Past based deck that is trying to recur things until Lab Maniac can finally get there. Win. I'm not sure if a consistent deck is going to place the top every iteration of this cube, but I'm really excited to see what comes out of it and excited to use that to kind of further my exploration of really where the fun is and how I can make the fun thing the good thing, right?
Yeah, no, that's always a challenge for sure. But I mean, I love to hear that fun's the goal. I think that's a topic that came up last week, and that, you know, some of the community was being more competitive than the others. And no matter where you fall in that, I think as long as we all go up there and be respectful, everybody can have a good time. And that's the entire spirit of Cube to me.
Yeah, and once you make fun the goal, you can do things like, how do we make this Zombies deck fun and good, right?
Yes, fun and good. Those do have to go together for me. I do struggle with having fun without good.
Yeah.
Admittedly, I already said this. But that being said, besides your cube, because obviously you've done that a time or two, are there any other cubes you're excited for?
I am excited to draft Aqua's Powered Cube because it has a Christopher Rush signed Black Lotus in it, among other very real copies of very real cards. And the drafters are given a little speech beforehand, and they get to, I don't know, hold power in their hands, and it's quite the feeling. For similar reasons, I want to draft the Old Man Cube, and... You know, I only started an Onslaught, so I don't have quite that early 90s nostalgia, but I do get sentimental feels holding those classic cards, so I'd be very excited for those two.
Kuros and Colossus.
Completely respectable.
Aqua's Cube for just a second here. I also had the opportunity to draft that here this past fall, and actually got to have the honor of having the Black Lotus in my deck as well. And that is just to hold that thing, you are right, is definitely an experience and makes you shuffle incredibly carefully and watch everything that you're doing at the table when you do it, which is definitely a lot of fun. Speaking of cube events and stuff, though, some insider baseball here that you told us before is that you were very fortunate enough to have another cube that was selected last year for the California Cube Champs. That's very similar to this event, and in fact, helped to inspire this event to take place and happen. Being that this is the second time you're submitting a cube to something like this, is there any lessons that you learned from the first time around that you can give out to the rest of us curators that are bringing a cube to an event like this for the first time?
Yes. A couple lessons from that. One of the main design goals of this cube was to make it budget. So just about all the cards, with the exception of one Relentless Dead, are under $5 each to acquire. I'm getting non-foil copies of everything. I want this to be something that I'm comfortable traveling with, that I'm comfortable having many people handle and play with, and that I'm comfortable letting out of my sight for very long periods of time. So that's one piece of advice of just decide how precious you want your child to be to you, because you're going to this event to have a lot of fun. And if you're worrying the whole time or anxious the whole time about your personal possessions, then that's going to cut against it, right? I called it the Raveyard Cube, or Max's Raveyard Cube. I got that title from a different guy named Max down in San Mateo, California. And the title is simple, it's punny, it's evocative, it's quick, right? And we're learning that these cubes with very short, good titles tend to be more easily marketable than others. So find something that even like a layperson could bounce off of, right? Finally, when writing the primer for my cube, I kept it really short. I am building it out a bit now that it was actually chosen, but I basically let people know, here's the tagline, here were the design goals, here's some extra themes. I didn't go into every color pair or even every theme because people get to explore that on their own. And then finally, here's, I have Ash Barons, which has four copies. The Triarch Praetorian is a zombie, and that's it. Enter the Raveyard if you dare. I went through the list and I scrubbed it of some of the cute stuff like Canal Dredger, conspiracy-specific cards that alter the draft mechanics. And I wanted to position this cube as, you know, good, simple, clean, not very complex, very evocative instead of a theme and of fun. Because this sort of event is a huge brain drain already. And if people are going to step out and try a bunch of new cubes, they're going to want to rest their brains, rest their finger muscles into a space that they're maybe more familiar with, which, you know, drafting something that feels more like a standard set than a constructed.
I'm personally very excited for some grindy old games like that. It's going to sound like block constructed or limited back then. I cannot wait. Max, final question, good sir. Have you had the opportunity to draft any of the other cube lists before?
The only cube list I've drafted before is Aqua's Powered Cube, which I drafted at the same venue that Washington Cube Champs will be at. I tried to take my Magic Online vintage knowledge into it, and I did not draft enough around like A-B card combos, so I would be on the lookout for those.
Got it.
Love it.
Very cool.
I am curious. Just as a final point here, this is just something I was thinking of, because we've dabbled in them, and you've mentioned a couple in passing, but you've mentioned you're adding the Surveil lands over the Scry lands from, I think it was Born of the Gods. That's one change you are making. You've turned down Ryan's Samwise Gamgee Lord of the Rings. Is there anything else that you're looking to change going into the event? Is there cards that are on your radar?
I mentioned a card like Curious Cadaver, which is two blue black for a 3/1 flying zombie detective that just says whenever you sacrifice a clue, return it from your graveyard to your hand. So that'll give the zombies deck something of a plan for flyers, which is a 3/1 blocker every turn. It synergizes with Investigate, which is a theme in my cube. And it plays into what the zombie deck wants to do, which is it's rooted in blue and black, and it's trying to recur its zombies over and over. So cards like that, I am going to be adding into the cube. I'm not looking to shake anything up too much, but I want to give decks a bit more reach, if that makes sense.
Love it. Curious Cadaver. Noted. Yeah, this card, it gives me Master of Death vibes, but...
That's in the cube.
I do like the Sacrifice a Clue moving into supporting this Investigate thing more. Definitely fits the theme. I like it. I like it.
Very cool.
Yeah. This was a blast.
Well, good. I was going to say, yeah, is there anything else that you wanted to touch on here as we're wrapping up, or shout outs you wanted to make, or anything else that you wanted to say here before we start to finalize this discussion?
I think that was it. To all the designers out there, you know, let fun guide you. Maybe start with those big restrictions, like every card has to be in a tribe, and then let yourself breathe a bit and add more cards like that Phyrexian we talked about earlier that aren't in the tribe, but that really feed into your cube synergies. I think when we start from that rigid space and then let ourselves expand a bit in our design, we end up with a better product overall.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I love it. It's a beautiful cube.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast with us today and talking. We appreciate you giving us your time and being willing to come talk about your child, as it were, here before we get to play it in the event. Hopefully this discussion is going to help some people feel a little bit more comfortable going into the event and having an idea of what to expect when they approach your cube. So thank you so much for coming onto the show. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us for today's discussion. Just to remind everybody that we will be doing some more of these style of episodes here over the next coming weeks. We've got some other of the designers lined up to come onto the show. Sadly, we will not be able to get to everybody's cube. We're planning on not doing a primer for my cube because, of course, there's multiple places out there where you can get information about the Popper Cube. And the other thing that I would point people to is that Lucky Paper Radio, just this past fall, did an episode with Aqua and his powered cube, discussing his design goals, a lot of the different things that he was thinking about or asking questions about with the cube back at that time. So a fairly recent episode that will give some context for that list that people can take a look at. We will link that into the show notes for people to reference as well. But there will be a couple of cubes that sadly we don't get to do primers for. To those curators, I do apologize, but we're trying to do as many people as we possibly can. So again, thank you for joining us for today's discussion. Just to remind everybody that the show does have an email, which is squaresthatcube, where you can get a hold of us and give us any feedback about this episode or suggestion for content for the future that you may have. We also do quite a bit of posting on the PNW Cube Facebook group, as well as the Discord that goes along with it. Again, stuff that we're doing throughout the week when we're drafting are the cubes at places like Wayward. We tend to do pictures of the decks that were drafted by players and also just try to create a community where people can talk and chat about Cube. We would love to have anybody, even if you don't live in the Northwest, join us in that channel or those chats and talk about Cube. We're more than happy to have you. So thank you, everybody, and hope everybody has a good week, and we will be back next week.